This is episode 35 of the Coffee Break Podcast. Today, our guest is Sam Gray. He's been one of our team members since 2012, and today's conversation is going to be all things inventory related. He's going to be talking about kind of his journey through the LockDock strategy as we've grown and changed our inventory practices and ordering practices. He's going to share a lot of that information with you, as well as some of the ideas and strategies that he's implemented through learning from others. So it's going to be a great conversation. Grab a fresh cup of coffee and join us for today's conversation.
We got so much to say. We got a podcast to make. We're sipping on lattes, and it's time for a coffee break. It's time for a coffee break.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us today for the podcast. Sam, thank you very much for being with us today. I know this conversation, I think, is going to be beneficial for us and for everybody that's going to be listening and watching, because we are in an active state of reinventing our whole inventory process. So we'll get into all of that conversation here shortly. But before we get too far, I have been very much excited about this segment with you, because I know you do not like surprises. So it's time for our segment called Rapid Fire. Five randomly selected questions just to get under your skin.
Sounds like fun.
And I will be scoring you with an unknown scoring system. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Here we go. Number one, where did you get into the most trouble with your parents for as a kid? With your parents as a kid?
Probably throwing my brother through a window.
Throwing your brother actually through a window?
Well, it was
closed?
Well, there's two sets of a window. I threw him through the first set. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean,
if it was two, worse. I would have really bad,
And this is your brother, Levi, yes. That is your twin.
Yep.
Why would you have thrown him through a window? He's such a nice, friendly guy.
We were fake wrestling, whatever, and I decided to do a suplex and, the wrong direction.
So what was the consequence of this?
A lot of yelling.
All right. Number two, what is the most random thing in your wallet?
Well, I keep my wallet on my phone, so there's nothing random. It's just cards.
Oh.
Maybe a Fandango movie gift card.
That's pretty random.
That's probably expired.
And that's been very efficient for you to keep your wallet with you on your phone.
Yes.
So you lose both.
Yeah, exactly. I might as well lose everything.
Good job. Number three, if you could only listen to one song for the rest of your life, what song would you pick? And as a bonus point, everybody in the room has a chance to guess as well. Go, Sam.
Everybody knows I'm going to say Phil Collins, In the Air Tonight.
Boom, 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 boom. That has been played probably the most in our office. Yes. All right. Number four, if you could pick your nickname, what would people call you?
Sam.
But you've given yourself
your own
nickname, Sambo.
Yeah, Sambo. Okay. That's pretty widely accepted.
Yeah. Sam introduced himself on our conference call one time as Sambo here.
Sambo here. Yep.
Google. All right. And then the last question, if you could pick three famous people to be a part of your entourage, who would you pick and why?
That was a tough one. Chad Lingenfeld.
Wow.
John Mayer and... Maybe we'll go with Phil Collins.
John Mayer, Phil Collins.
I don't think of those need explanations.
That's solid. Thank you, Sam. All right, that concludes our rapid fire segment. You come in with a score of 822. Which is reasonable.
Yeah, average.
Yep. So good job there. Little known fact, Sam, actually the theme song that you just heard a few minutes ago, that was the handiwork of Sam, inspired by Phil Collins and John Mayer.
Yes.
All right. So here's the reason why we wanted to have this conversation today. Sam has been with us for many, many years now, and I was thinking about it this morning prepping for this conversation. When you started back in whatever year it was that you started, do you remember what it was?
2012.
Your office was in the hall.
Yes, I was shoved in front of a copier.
We literally had zero space available, and we found a corner of a hall, and you shared it with a copier and a filing cabinet or a storage cabinet.
Yep.
Set you up a cubicle in there. And ever since then, a lot has changed. At that point, you came on to help kind of to manage some of the operations as an assistant with some purchasing and completing quotes and things like that. Yep. Current role right now is purchasing manager, and I was doing some math this morning, and hopefully I'm close on it. Right now, you've been working in about a 300 square foot section of inventory,
right?
And you're currently like not right this second because we're in the studio, but right. When you finish here, you're going back to moving inventory from that 300 square foot section over to about 1,000 square foot yep. section of receiving an inventory.
Yes.
So started out in the hall. Mm-hmm. Now you've got a 1,000 square foot inventory area.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about this transformation and how you have seen that happen, some of the things, lessons that you've learned along that process.
Yeah, so it's actually been, and that's one big example I tell a lot of, especially newer guys, to kind of show where we've come from. But it's just crazy how, you know, at one point, 300 square feet was a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and really.
Yeah, because that was triple the size of what we had before.
Exactly. So that's, you know, it's all in perspective. And at one point, like you said, I was doing parts. I was doing quotes. I was running shop as well.
Yeah.
And now those are all separate departments because our organization has just grown.
I forgot about that. We had a counter that we had built and made you man it.
Yes. I basically just, if I ran into trouble, just asked Luke to help me.
Yeah.
Which was half the time. So, but yeah, it's just, that's, it's about perspective, but as you go through each iteration of growing in space, it kind of forces you to think about how you're going to use that space, and you're ultimately going to, you just always think in a couple of years, you're going to go, why did I ever do it that way? Cause there's always a better way.
Yeah.
And there's not really, you're never not going to reinvent it. You're always going to be improving and reinventing. And the greatest idea ever will be the worst idea once you come up with your next greatest idea.
Yeah, yeah, so, it's a constant evolution. Yeah. I know Levi talked about this on many podcast episodes ago about analyze, implement, and modify.
Yeah.
So that you're constantly kind of understanding what works, why it worked, and why it didn't work.
Right.
And change things. So so that's kind of been a growth process. I forgot about that. But yeah, literally there was, you were running the front counter, helping to order parts, finish quotes, and then working in kind of managing the inventory, which was at that point like two shelves.
Yes, yes.
And now, you know, there's been several different iterations in our current warehouse space. And now as we move, some of the lessons that you've learned. So and this is why I want to have this conversation, because I think it's more of a story of the lessons that you've learned through these different processes. Mm-hmm. When we moved into the current space that we're in now, we set up shelves in a specific way for a specific reason. And about 2 years ago, realized that there was a significantly better way to do that. So let's step back to when you set up front. Mm-hmm. Here in this current space, that was your desk.
Yes.
And the inventory was in the back.
Yeah.
What worked with that and what didn't work?
So at that time, we had a much more organized warehouse than in our old space. But I was up front because I was manning the counter still. But ultimately to pull parts. And I think once we got a tech, I was still up there just because that was my desk. So even then, I was going all the way to the back to the warehouse to pull parts.
Yep.
Again, warehouse was much more organized, but we realized that we were losing a lot of efficiency in me having to go back there, pull parts, get them set up, print a ticket, come back to the front, hit save, you know.
It was again, as you said, when we looked at it after the fact, it was like, that was really, didn't make a lot of sense.
Right.
But at the time, it's what was necessary. But there was about for people that don't know our office space, about a 50, 60 foot walk between
right.
your desk and where yes. your inventory was.
Yes. Yeah. And it got super frustrating at times because I would go back there. I would literally have a work order and put that it was pulled, go pull it and then come back and hit save to make sure that it was done. And there was obviously, if anything changed between those two times where I got distracted,
yeah,
it messed up both processes. So, so then we moved my desk to the back in the warehouse. But what's interesting about that, that was like the greatest thing ever.
Yep.
Because I was right there in the back. I could pull parts, but I still had to go across the warehouse.
Yep.
To
you were in the same area, but you were still separated from it.
I was on the other side of the warehouse from where the shelves were.
Yeah.
So I was going and pulling them from there, printing a ticket in my office and putting it back on my side of the warehouse.
Yeah.
Which then we realized that was not efficient. And I think Luke had the idea to squeeze everything into one little area. And once we did that, I was literally in the inventory. The shelves were surrounding my desk, which was like awesome. And it's just crazy how we went from a 50 foot being inefficient to, 10 feet being inefficient.
Yeah.
And that's just a picture of how you're always improving.
So with that, a couple of things to kind of pull out is, where did some of these ideas come from? I know you mentioned that one of our team members, Luke, had mentioned or had kind of assessed this, but where did we get the idea for some of the different changes? Was it based off of other things that we had seen, or was it based off of just observing some of the functions and, I guess, inefficiencies at that point?
Well, I think a lot of it's a mixture. Like, I think one thing is that we always are good about having that conversation of, is what I'm doing the right way to do it?
Yeah.
Instead of just doing it and making it, we're, as an organization, we're pretty good about keeping that conversation fresh. But I mean, in the same way, sometimes even you'll go visit a locksmith in the area and they have something, some kind of thing organized. I think you sent me one just recently of the continuous hinges that Tony's got.
Yep.
And just like, oh man, that's a really cool way to organize these. Just getting inspiration from other people, stepping back and looking and saying, is there a better way to do this? Just never just settling for what you've got and accepting the fact that there may be a better way to do, even if you've just changed it.
So we talked about this before. There's information that that you're not very clear on, and then there's things that you don't know you don't know, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And one of the things I believe has been beneficial for us is there's been times that we had no idea that things existed out there until we visited other warehouses or other industries, some shelving. For simplicity's sake, shelving that we didn't even know existed. Yeah. We had some boxes. So, about a year ago, visited Bill Blanchard with AMAX out in Portland, Oregon. And I immediately FaceTimed you and said, Sam, you've got to check this out. Yeah, like, look at these boxes.
Yeah.
we're excited about cardboard.
Yeah, exactly.
But finding inspiration through what other people are doing, and then trying to figure out how to apply that or morph it into our operations.
Yeah. And what's funny about even those boxes is, as we're moving our inventory, because we got those boxes, was that like a year ago now?
It's been close.
Pretty close. Because we got those, I mean, we've probably saved, we've saved a lot of time on just moving from one area to another because we just did it to organize.
Yeah.
Without even thinking of moving inventory, but that idea in itself helped us tremendously in just moving our inventory from one area to another.
So a takeaway, and I'm trying to be very tactical with this. I know we have kind of a lot of information, and some of this conversation could get sporadic, but some of the takeaways, I believe, is never settle on this is the only way.
Yeah.
Because if you're open to change, open to kind of, let's move this around and see if it works. Like, there's no major downfall.
And I'll say this about that. Probably the best advice I've ever gotten is from people who have no idea how to do what I do.
Yeah.
But that gives a completely free or fresh and unbiased opinion on it. And that's some of the best advice I've gotten, is because it's easy to go, well, you've never done this, you don't know what you're doing.
Sure,
but really, a lot of the best advice can come from, I mean, Jessica Bennett in our accounting department gave me just a different tip on organizing our jobs here.
Yeah.
And it's helped tremendously.
Yeah.
And she's never done, she's never run a warehouse.
So the attitude of, hey, I'm open for suggestions.
Yes.
Creating an environment of I'm open for suggestions and having people that don't operate in those roles come in and basically observe.
Yeah.
Hey, why do you do this? We went through this process here recently with our standard operating procedures as we've been documenting a lot of these things. And people have made videos, screenshot videos of this is the process that I go through. Mm-hmm. And then we all sit in a room and go, oh, wow. Like, yeah. How can we make this better? Because we're adding in a lot of steps or we're changing tabs or screens a lot. Can we simplify this?
Yeah, so exactly.
Being open for having the behavior or the attitude rather of I'm open for suggestions and then figuring out a way to test those observations.
Exactly. Yep.
So with that, so we just kind of spread a lot of different things there because we talked about processes and procedures, but we also talking about organizational ideas. But if someone's observing you, then they can maybe give some suggestion as to why are you walking back and forth 12 times to the same area? Yeah. Why don't you move
over there? Yeah.
That or something as simple as I want to say this is very, very simplistic, but it's something that a lot of times we overlook. Here recently, you and William in the back were sharing a tape gun.
Yep.
Right? So many times a day, you guys are either trying to find the tape gun or handing it back and forth. And what was the solution? I mean, this was a groundbreaking solution.
Buy another tape gun.
Buy another tape gun.
Eureka.
But, you know, it's those types of things that a lot of times you get in kind of just stuck in that.
Yeah.
Well, this is just the way that it happens.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. And even me, like I find myself, I think me more than others are bad about if there's a hard way to do something, just getting it done and accepting that as the way to do it. And really, you just have to be open to be able to look at it as is there a better way to do this? Should I buy another tape gun or should I just complain about having to find the tape gun every day?
So what would you say to people that are in a particular position? Maybe it's inventory, warehouse organization, whatever, and they don't want, like, they're hesitant to have somebody come in and observe them because they don't want to be critiqued or criticized about what they're doing.
I would just say it's ultimately it's more helpful, and I guess that's the thing is you can't look at it as, if you look at it personally, like, you know, I don't want to be critiqued or told my warehouse is inefficient.
Yeah.
In reality, if you're always improving, you have to be willing to accept you do it to yourself on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, hey, this is not working. And I know you do it to others, you know, even if you're not telling them, you're looking at others and going, man, that's kind of a silly way to do that. So it's just, that's part of a natural way of improving things. And ultimately, even if they say that your warehouse stinks and that it's a horrible way to do it, if it helps you in the long run, then it doesn't matter, you know? And you have to, if you're in the mindset of always improving, you can't be in a mindset of always improving without being able to accept things that will help you improve.
Yeah.
That's not the mindset. That's, you know, complete opposite. So if you're closing yourself off to other ideas and opinions, even if they're uneducated, then you're closing yourself off to potential, you know, completely changing the way you do things, making things more efficient.
Okay. So with that thought in mind, the current process that you have, the current setup that you've had in the warehouse, because you've had that for the last year or two,
mm-hmm.
The organization of where shelves are, where certain products are, how things work. What are some things that you learned through that process that you are now implementing or changing as you have an opportunity kind of for a new slate?
Well, I think this pretty much happens every time we've changed the shelves. We realized, well, you know what? While I'm moving this product from one area to the other, I actually never use this one product, you know, so maybe I should put it on a higher shelf because I don't touch it. And this product that I have to get a ladder for every single day, maybe I should put it where I can get right to it. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So that's one big thing that pretty much every time I run into. And one thing to be mindful of with inventory is keeping it efficient. And even like it, I think my big thing is I always tried to organize things by category almost to an exact T. Like, well, that doesn't go with that lock. But ultimately, if you're putting things that you use the most at the most accessible place to you, then you're going to notice a tremendous difference in the efficiency of your day. as simple as getting a ladder is, doing it 10 times in one day adds up.
Yeah. So we've talked about this before, but just to kind of go back to the conversation we were in the middle of earlier, we talked about visiting other shops to kind of see how they do things and getting ideas from them.
Yes.
Well, we've also had a very awesome opportunity to visit a lot of manufacturing facilities with ASSA ABLOY and be able to see a lot of the variations that they've done through some organization.
Right.
And you had an opportunity to go visit Medico up in Salem, Virginia. And what was one of the big takeaways that you had from that process?
So we actually did a literal class on 5S, and they take you through all these scenarios.
Real quick, 5S.
5S. Yeah, it's a process on making essentially making processes efficient.
So that stands for sort, set and order, shine, standardize, and sustain.
Sustain. Yep.
I had a cheat sheet here.
Yeah. So that was a process developed by, I think, Toyota, but it was it's something that a lot of organizations use to they just apply that 5S method to their processes to make them more efficient. And we did a really, really, probably one of the...
Sorry to interrupt, but when you heard about that process, what was kind of like the light switch that went off in your head as it applied to your day-to-day?
Well, I mean, just honestly, just the... First of all, the fact that I've never even thought about... I mean, you just didn't even think about how to make grabbing a part more efficient, you know, because you think that's just a very mundane task. Like, how much time could that save you?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the exercises we did was literally using Legos to build this specific house. They gave us exact instructions to build a house. And we did one exercise with all the Legos in a bin mixed together.
Yep, just a big pile.
And then we did one exercise where every single one was labeled and separated by type. And the time difference was insane.
It was like cut it in half or something.
Or more.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was, that just kind of shows you the real importance of setting things in order, making sure things are cleaned. And not just that, part of that is making a process to make sure that's continually being improved. You always know what's being used the most and what's not being used the most, and getting rid of the stuff you don't use.
Yeah.
And even Medico's factory, they're serious about it, to the point they've got boards up with their tools, and they've got their tools traced out so that you know exactly what tool goes in that part on the wall. It's very, very, very to the T.
And that helps too when you're changing shifts or different people are using these tools, because a lot of times people get very possessive over certain tools in their area, and they don't want people touching their stuff because they don't want it to be misplaced.
Yep.
But finding a method of realizing that there's going to be more people utilizing this, so let's create a process, and this always goes back here. So when it's missing, we know that it's missing instead of searching for hours for it.
And that doesn't just apply to inventory either. I mean, that can apply to, I mean, even if you kind of compare them, our core values line up with a lot of those things: unexpected cleanliness and defined expectations of where does this go, you know, how does it need to look, you know, why do we do it? We do it that way so that we can serve our customers better, because our vans look good. We know where things are. We get our jobs done more efficiently. We're not, you know, I mean, we've all been in the place where we're sifting around for an hour for one tool that we need because we put it in the wrong spot.
So kind of going on that same process from an inventory standpoint, you know, we're managing a large amount of inventory throughout our facility.
Yeah.
And as our company has grown, that amount of inventory has continued to increase, which means that the prioritization of keeping this organized has a lot more substantial value.
Yes.
So with that, what, you know, you have in our world, and I would think this is applicable to really anybody that's managing inventory, is you're going to have large parts. You know, we've got a safe and we have doors in the warehouse. Mm-hmm. That's something hard to slide under a counter and be like, oh, I couldn't find it. But then we have small parts, lock cylinders and keys and things of that nature that can easily be misplaced when you have 1,000 square foot. That one set of screws is now gone missing.
Right.
So what are some methods that you're putting in place to kind of help keep those things structured and in order so that when something is not where it's supposed to be, you know that it's not there or when it's the last one's used, that we have a process to get it back.
Yeah, this is probably, just being transparent, the biggest area I struggle with.
Okay.
But I've found that number one is if there's an inch of space that you have that's not designated for a specific function, even if that function is just to be clear, then it's going to get junk. I mean, I remember when we moved from our very first warehouse, the tiny warehouse, there was this corner that was just filled with crap, and we're like, oh, it's just too small. Well, you know, once we get a new warehouse, we won't have that issue. And literally, we just had a bigger corner in the new warehouse that was bigger. It was the same corner filled with this more junk because it was bigger.
Yeah, it's like your junk drawer.
Exactly, because we didn't have a specific area. It was clean for a couple months, and then it just, if you don't designate, even if the area is just supposed to be completely free of anything, it's got to have a function and a designation, an expectation for that space. And another thing is everything that comes in, make sure that it goes somewhere, because it's so easy to put something, and this is something I'm really bad about, it's put something on your desk and come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just the beginning to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And it, next thing you know, you have a disorganized space. So if you find something that doesn't have a place, then figure out a way that to make a place for that next time. And make sure it goes somewhere, because ultimately, if that's the biggest thing, is just make sure everything that comes in has a place to go, and every inch that you own has a designation for what goes there.
So one of the things that I've seen you do, and an idea that you kind of grasped a hold of, was having shelf space, not only labeling the shelf, labeling the product or whatever that goes on it. So as it becomes depleted, because that's a big issue when a shelf becomes depleted, then, oh, where is it supposed to go back, or what's missing?
Yes. Yeah, we ran into that with, like, for example, cylinders, and it's probably more helpful on vans as well, because they keep a certain amount of this item. Well, once that, they used to have everything shoved in one drawer, so once that drawer got empty, they didn't know what they were missing. They just knew it was empty. So if it's labeled this cylinder, then whenever they run out of that cylinder, they know exactly what is missing in that specific drawer. So labeling the part itself is just as big, and knowing what's in there is just as big as labeling the location.
I know this has been a conversation that I've had with other businesses throughout the country, and it's this concept of dead stock. Basically, how long do you keep something on the shelf before you go, this is useless and it's a waste of space, that you have to Marie Kondo the place?
Yeah.
What are we doing about that, if anything, and what are things that we can do to be more keenly aware of that?
Yeah, I think that's something that I don't know if we've fully answered yet, but I think the biggest thing that we have done is, if there is product that's been sitting there forever and everybody's claiming that it's been there forever and we'll never sell it, just put a date on it. And you know, once you put that date on it, you know, let's come back in a year, 6 months, and say, have this product even moved at all? And I guess the biggest question to ask yourself as an organization is, how long do I keep this? How much is the space on my shelf worth?
Yeah.
And, you know, how long do I wait? You know, and honestly, I don't know if I know the answer to that question for ourselves, but I know the biggest thing is just dating it, putting a label on it. We put dates on our inventory labels for product.
Yep.
So we know when that was stickered and how long it's been sitting there. And even we've been moving product over to our new warehouse, and I've noticed, hey, we stickered this back in October of
last year,
and it hasn't moved at all.
Yeah.
So now we can say, okay, this really hasn't moved in a year. It's not just speculation.
It's interesting, and this is a fact of life, is time moves so quickly. Yeah. And when you're dealing with a lot of these different things that are happening regularly, you lose track of real time.
Right.
You know, we sell a lot of these. Well, you actually only sold one in the last 12 months, or we rarely ever sell these, and we sold 1,000 of them in the last month.
Like, yeah, exactly.
You don't really kind of understand exactly where that process is. And so because you're dealing with so many widgets on a daily basis, you've got to have a good track of that. All right. I want to talk about this for a few minutes, but just from a setup perspective. I think from a fundamental perspective, each business has its own own things that they have to work on, from inventory management, right? So there's, I don't think there's this out of the box solution that says this is how you manage all of your inventory and this is the way that it happens. But I do believe there are fundamentals that you can understand and apply in different areas. Over the course of the past year, you just mentioned it, you went through a labeling process and a stickering process. What was the purpose of that?
Well, there was actually two things. One was identifying things without, because at one time, to know what a product was, sometimes you had to, you know, flip the box around, find the label, read it, and even then you may not really know. So one big part was identifying very quickly what a part was and being able to scan it.
So all of our products, or a majority of them, all have the same type of label on it with the same type of information in the same place.
Yep, and it's got a barcode so that our technicians can scan it in order to bill for that part, and we can scan it to move it around. And the second part was once we've got that label on, I mean, we've got labels on our locations as well, so you can actually marry a part with a location. So once you've got everything labeled, it's easy to scan and find and identify. So it's a two-part process there.
And so the benefit of that was, one, that we knew where things were, we knew how many of a thing that we had, and then we knew how to find it when we needed it.
Yep, and how long it's been there.
How long it's been there, and that we are accurately billing it when it's been installed. And then what else did that give us benefit for? What was the kind of the long-term process that you're working on?
Well, one long-term thing for labeling is that our technicians they call a lot less because they don't have to spend as much time identifying the part. And to add it to the work order, I know that at one point we've had meetings about, hey, you need to make sure you're putting the right part number on. And then the conversation comes up, well, how do I know what the right part number is? I'm like, well, memorize it. You know what I mean? And so, like, which I touch part numbers on a daily basis, so I may know a lot more than they do, so it's easy for me to say that.
Yeah.
But having labels made that so much easier for them, you know, because I would say that constantly, but there was really a better way we could provide them. They don't have to remember a part number. They just scan it, you know? So that's something that we as an organization could do on our end, instead of pushing that off on the technician who's billing it. There's always those kind of things, but putting labels on everything, and we've even been able to implement that into our work order process, where I can close a PO, and once the PO is closed, everything, all the labels underneath that order gets printed automatically. So then we've basically built our inventory into our own work order process.
Sure.
So that's one huge part of inventory, is that before inventory, you have your work order process, and then you have the stuff that you order and you keep on your shelf. Whereas with inventory, it's all one process. It's all married and integrated.
So with all that, and this is kind of one of the points I was trying to get to, was time. This has been a conversation. I mean, it is now September of 2019.
Yes.
And this conversation started, I don't even know what year, but you've been actively labeling and working on the inventory system since summer of last year.
Yes.
And it's done now?
No. But that's time is probably the biggest, I guess the end goal of all of inventory is when you automate anything, when you label anything, when you do all this, it's to make things more efficient and save time. And I guess one thing that I've learned is that 1 second saved is worth a lot more than you really think on a day-to-day basis, because it's really easy to go, okay, well, there's no reason to rip all this out and put it in fresh and put labels on every, it was the worst process ever when we first did our first iteration of inventory, because I had to go through every part in the warehouse and label it.
Yeah.
But I mean, immediately we got a result of how much money do we have in the warehouse.
Yeah.
But also, you know, the time it used to take me to figure out where a part was, picking it up and trying to figure out what it was.
Yeah.
And again, all the information that used to take me, you know, minutes to hours to figure out, I could now do at a click.
You knew exactly where to go look for it. Yep. I've got a question that has come up on the Facebook feed about deciding how much stock we keep in on the shelf. But I want to get to that in just a second, so I'll give you a second to think about that. In this process of labeling and identifying, recognizing what stock we've had for a long period of time, and then implementing it all, it's given you the ability to share this process with others. So now anybody that comes in there can scan or know where they're looking, so it doesn't rely on your memorization or those. So it's kind of setting you up for the future versus just the immediate. And one of the things you just talked about goes back to the observation phase of allowing somebody to observe your processes to help you understand the areas where you are spending an extra 30 seconds for the short term rather than taking an hour and a half aside to fix the problem so that it saves you minutes in the future.
Yep.
All right. So going into this, here's the question. How do you decide how much of a specific part number or a specific item do you keep on the shelf? Like, for instance, a lock set. How many of a specific lock set? What is the process that we're using to decide that?
So one thing that we've done that has been super helpful as far as keeping it in the warehouse, I've just typically, which we have more and more reporting, the more and more accurate our inventory gets, but just based on how much we're moving every week is how much I typically try to keep on the shelf. But one thing that really helps, well, there's really two things. One is we got our project management and really training as well involved in how much do we keep? Because they're the ones who are out in the field. And because one big question is how much do we keep on our vans?
Mm-hmm.
So they've been a huge part in saying, you know, because there's really two ends of it is, do we stock our vans for that one time a year that we're going to do this one job to save a trip? Or do we stock our fans for what we sell on every single day? That's a question you have to answer. And I think our project management team has really helped me out in figuring out stock levels for our vans. And then as far as inventory, the biggest thing that helped me is just set a number. And if that number is not good enough, you can change it. But if you don't set a number, you're not gonna know.
Yeah.
You're just gonna see that it's empty and crap, I need to order 10 more. So I would set, even if the numbers, I need 10 of this item. And if that number, you know, if you're not going through enough of it at a time, if it's always full, then maybe you need to lower your number and get less stock. But if it's always empty, then you need to up that stock.
So trial and error is one. And then two is identifying how quickly can I get this replaced?
Yes.
And then how much of these are we going through?
Yeah.
So if it's, you said, I can get this in 3 or 4 days.
Right.
So that gives me a week turn. So I need to see how many of these we're selling in a week so that it's constantly replenished.
Yeah.
And then you're doing that by automated reporting. So you're getting a list of that information.
Exactly.
And then the other part of that I would like to add on, because I think it's very interesting. We've had this conversation a lot. Deciding what is on a service vehicle versus in stock in the warehouse are two factors. One is how many that we're selling, but two, how many could we sell?
Right.
Because if we don't have them, and this is the conversation that we have a lot, is if it's not there, then you don't have the ability to sell it. So therefore, you're tracking an unknown number. And it's something that I think you have to keep in mind. People, typically speaking, people's process are they're going to sell what they have available.
Right.
If they don't have it available, they're not going to sell it. Therefore, your numbers are not going to be true.
Right. Right.
So identifying what our solutions need to be and what the processes should be is probably a higher level question, which is even a whole nother conversation of complication.
Yeah.
But it's if that makes any sense, it's like you can track a lot of stuff, but if you don't have it to sell, then you're now tracking. You have to track opportunities rather than products sold.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those self-fulfilling prophecy things we've kind of seen happen before. Like, you know, somebody sells something, it gets replenished, they sell it again, so they give them two more, they sell two more,
yeah,
and we're like, we don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg kind of thing. So But yeah, that's something that is part of the discussion that you have to ask both questions there.
And we have some technicians that ask us for specific parts and say, "Hey, can I stock this on my van?" Which that has always been a long debate in the past. But yes. But we, because of the software that's been implemented, we can say, here's three of them.
Yeah, and if you haven't sold any in 2 months, then we'll take it off.
Yeah,
you know, it's one of those conversations.
You have a better way to track it. So another thing all of this, everything we just talked about is done through our web app that we use, Opening Management System. That is, it tracks all of our doors that we work on. It tracks all of our key systems and now our inventory. Yep. It's always kept track of our product database as far as what items that we sell, but we're now getting better at understanding where it's located, how much of it that we have, and how much that we've sold.
Yes. And another benefit to inventory in terms of keeping track of product is that a lot of times, which I think some of this we didn't realize how much we were doing, but a lot of times, for example, if there was a part on the work order that we needed to change for sake of, you know, maybe it was the wrong finish and we needed to swap it out, or maybe we spec'd the wrong solution.
Yeah.
We just didn't change it. We just put we installed the right part and left it. With the inventory, you have to have the accurate part that was pulled out, or else inventory doesn't work. So inventory's kind of forced us to be more accurate and more confident in what products are being installed at a location or at a job site. Because you have to be accurate with inventory.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, whereas before it didn't matter, we were built, it was the same price, so who cares what finishes on the work order. This is causing us to be more accurate, which means that we can now go back and be confident that what is on that opening, you know, for example, we can go back and see the history of the job and be confident of the parts that are in there.
So the concept, the theory that you just described is that we want to eliminate assumption.
Yes.
By giving a physical code, a physical barcode to scan, mm-hmm. that then gives the accuracy of product that's attached to that opening, so we know exactly what's on that opening, and then it carries out through our inventory system. So it's less guessing or looking through a long list of products.
Right.
For context, I just pulled up our system, and it shows that we have 8,995 products in our product database.
Yep.
So that would, when you're on a job site looking through, you could do some searching and filtering, but you're dealing with 8,995 products rather than a barcode that you scan and it says, nope, it's that one.
Right. And that's one thing that's cool is based, now that we've been doing it for a year, we have a left reporting, but I'll have a technician come to me and say, "Hey, I've got a job coming up and I'm supposed to go look and see what kind of lock we need. It looks like we've been out there 5 times and sold the same type of lock.
Yep.
Can I have one
and take with me?"
And sure enough, that's what it is, because we've got reporting of what we've installed on that location, even on the door, what's been installed before.
You should have started out the podcast with that. That's a great story.
Yeah.
All right. Let's tie a bow on this. It's been a lot of information, and I know we kind of went in a lot of different directions, and hopefully it made sense at the end of the day, where there were some practical takeaways of, you know, analyzing this information, trying to figure out, hey, being open to constructive criticism, I guess, to understand these processes. If you want more information on the system that we're talking about, and this was not a advertisement for that, but we do have a page up on our website, lockdoc.net/app. You can check that out, kind of see a little bit of what he's talking about. You can check out our podcast page, lockdoc.net/podcast, for all of the episodes that we have. Well over 52 now. We've been doing this for over a year. Lots of information about just information like this, business ideas, strategies, business practices, ways that you can implement and improve things in your business, as well as interviews from other business leaders, managers, thought leaders in our industry and outside of our industry that have helped us to understand how to implement new ideas and structures inside of our business. So all of that information is available for you. We ask you to subscribe if you haven't already, because you're going to get a notification every Tuesday when this podcast comes out with the latest information for you. Check that out, as well as all the videos online, Facebook, YouTube, everywhere you can find video and then podcast. But you can find all of that information at lockdoc.net/podcast. Thank you very much for your time today. Thank you, Sam, for being with us. And we will see you next time here on the Coffee Break Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
To learn more about the topics discussed today and to connect with us online to hear all of the episodes available, visit lockdoc.net/podcast.
We got so much to say. We got a podcast to make. We're sipping on lattes and it's time for a coffee break. It's time for a coffee break.
The Coffee Break Podcast is brought to you by LockDock Security. We'd love to connect with you online on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Just search LOCDOCINC.